But anyway, let's do a podcast.
Let's do that.
We haven't said anything funny yet. Fine.
Hold on. Where's my
as it's a goat-free, I will be happy.
Yeah.
I don't ask much.
No goats, Cash.
My Facebook went down and now I have no friends. That's the only one I have.
Oh. That's sad.
Except for stuffing and cranberry sauce. But the worst thing is quitting cold turkey.
Okay.
He's been working on that for a week, and it's actually the best he's been able to deliver it.
That was from Thanksgiving, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
I have no stolen jokes to give.
What?
Yay!
That's a first.
Oh, well, let's count it down.
All right, let's count it down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Leland Wolf with Wolf Stamps from Sacramento, California, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Return to sender. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 60. I like even numbers.
Yep. That's the end of season 2 for us, actually, too.
Season 2?
Yeah, I mark them every 30 as another season.
Oh, okay.
Just for reference.
Yay.
Yay! I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Dawn. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today, and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT, or you can call us and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher, and many more. So let's talk about stamps. This week, we'll be talking about stamp news, new postage rate increases all over the place, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag winter fun, Cash's corrections.
Hold on.
What?
Stamp postage rates increase, hashtag winter fun.
Absolutely.
there's a semicolon there.
Yeah, okay.
It's not us.
It's not our fun.
It's not us. Yeah, we're having fun, not them.
Okay.
And our expert topic this week is all about first day and event covers. So stamp news. Rates are going up everywhere. This month, expect to see postal rates change all over the world, including the U.S., Canada, and Australia this year. On average, the price to send mail in Canada is increasing by 5 cents, including a domestic letter rate change from 85 to 90 cents. However, this is after a much larger increase last year from 63 cents to 85 cents.
I have a question here, because I pulled up the Canadian post office site, and I don't think that number is correct, but I don't know what the correct number is.
Well, that's where I looked it up just today, actually. It was from their official post office site.
Yeah, because it shows a single stamp is a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But if you buy bulk stamps, like a coil roll or a booklet or something like that, then they charge you 85 cents. So are they actually giving you a 15 cent discount if you buy more than one stamp? Are they charging you a premium for purchasing just one stamp?
They might be.
But the question is
one stamp enough for a letter? It's what you put on the letter, not how much they charge for the stamps.
Well, they say up to 30 grams, and I'm guessing 30 grams is about an ounce. I'm not metric, so I'm metrically
challenged.
Yeah, but it said 30 grams was a dollar, but you could buy multiple stamps for 85 cents. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I have never seen that before. Where if you buy more than one stamp, you get a discount.
Well, it's going to get weirder because just wait till you hear what Australia did.
Okay, go ahead. Let's see what the Australians did.
Here in the U.S. rate changes will affect priority and express mail by about 12%, but our first-class letter rate will remain the same at 49 cents to send a letter anywhere in the 50 states.
I wonder if they're changing the insurance. For those who don't recall, the insurance rates are what really changed, what, about 6 months or 8 months ago?
About 8 months ago,
Eight months ago.
Like 300%.
Exactly, yeah.
The biggest change is being felt in Australia, where the rate to send a domestic letter will increase from 70 cents to a full dollar as of January 4. However, the rate isn't the only thing changing. Aussies can now look forward to a two-tier system for letter mail. Second-class mail, anyone? Okay.
What are they defining as second class?
You'll see. Right. We'll get there.
Oh, gosh. Okay, sorry.
Before the rate change, the basic domestic postage rate was 70 cents. The new rate of a dollar is not only 30 cents more, it also represents potentially slower mail delivery, as the Australian Post will now have what they call regular and priority letter mail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In announcing the January 4th rate change, Australia Post said all Australians now have a choice of priority and regular letter service. Rain.
Oh, is that rain?
That's rain.
Holy crap. I thought that was the...
Look at your window.
I thought that was the air conditioner coming on.
Your office is going through a car wash.
Oh, no. So everybody listening, that's not the air conditioner. We're in a thunderstorm.
We're in California. We don't cope with rain. It's like, what is this water from the sky? As I was saying, all Australians now have a choice of priority and regular letter service for sending their letters within Australia, in line with what has been available to business customers since June 2014.
So if I write you a check, I want it to go by the slow boat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But if you're writing me a check, it should go by the fast boat.
Absolutely. The priority letter service offers delivery within 1 to 4 business days, depending on the destination, according to Australia Post. Regular mail service can take up to 2 business days longer. For a letter to be sent by what Australia Post calls priority mail, a 50-cent label will need to be purchased from a post office or the Australia Post online shop and affixed to the envelope next to the stamp.
That should make for some actual pretty cool postal history.
Yes.
Because now it's...
But the question will be, will it have the denomination on it, or will it be something like an etiquette that you had to buy?
Yeah, exactly. Because are you purchasing a 50-cent stamp? Can you put a $1 stamp in a 50-cent stamp? Or do you need the $1 stamp plus the priority notice?
I think you need the label, not an additional stamp.
That'll be interesting. That'll be really cool.
I mean, because now you're forcing people to actually go and buy those new instead of using other postage.
And I would guess it would have to have a priority, or it have to have a fee on it, you know, the denomination.
Not necessarily. It could just have the service denomination, like priority letter or something like that, that would define the service, and then they could just change the amount that they charge for it.
Would it be like a forever priority stamp? Interesting.
Well, maybe not. Yeah.
I can see a world of problems developing out of this.
Oh, yeah.
I can see a lot of unhappy postal customers. Most of them being in Australia. Yes.
I think all being in Australia.
Australia Post issued 3 $1 wildflower stamps December 14, 2015 to meet the new dollar rate. In addition, a $2 stamp was issued at the same time to pay for the new rate for large envelopes, previously $1.40.
So they really went up, yeah.
Yeah. All 3 countries claim the decline of use of standard snail mail for delivering letters is the cause of the increase.
I think it's just government excess.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Are you saying the governments don't, like, pinch their pennies and watch every dollar?
No. Having been a government employee, yes.
Yeah, but at the same time, Scott did a really good job explaining why a toilet costs like $11,000.
Oh,
and it made sense.
I understand, yeah. Yeah. Don't like it, but yeah.
So now most information that could be sent on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper by mail over a period of a few days can now be sent by email, and people just aren't buying as many stamps.
Yeah, to be expected.
Yeah. Both the USPS and Australia Post cite the need to make up for the lack of volume by making it cost just a little more to send your mail, or in Australia's case, a lot more.
Yes, because you cannot fire people who work for the government. I mean, that would be terrible, right? If you're doing half the mail, you need half the people.
Well, at least in this country, that's true. The unions have The unions have it written into their contract that they cannot be fired. I mean, I would really love to have a job where I could not be fired and you know, get paid. I have no question that my next paycheck is coming.
Yep.
Well, I kind of have a job like that. Just nobody wants my job.
That's why you have that job.
That's why I have it, exactly.
That's why you have that job security.
Yeah, we got the little quotey fingers. Okay, time for hashtag stamp stories, hashtag winter fun. Are we having fun yet?
I'm having fun.
Good. This time of year, as the cold sets in, people tend to turn towards indoor activities for relaxation and fun. Certainly, stamp collecting is one of our favorite cold weather activities, as it is with so many others. This winter, as you sit down with a nice hot cup of cocoa, a few stamp albums, and a warm fire...
Those don't mix.
Yeah. Not all in the same physical place.
Yeah. Well,
who wrote that?
Yeah, who did it?
The fire's across the room, and then the hot cocoa is on a table, like on the other side somewhere.
Yeah,
right.
Your stamps are here. Anything liquid is way over way there.
Anything fiery is way over there.
I was wondering if you guys were going to catch that.
Yeah, this sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Okay, as you're sitting,
catch fire, so you pour the hot cocoa on it.
Yeah,
that works.
So go ahead with this false premise story here.
It's romanticized. Oh, that's what it is.
Okay.
Yes. So is it time to step it up a notch and get that exhibit ready for the next big show? Maybe you're one stamp away from completing that set, and you are setting your sights on a new area to collect. Or maybe you are just looking to get through that gigantic box of Germany that was a steal at the last stamp auction.
Yeah, Jeff.
Or need to fess up and pick out some donations for your local Boy Scout troop. Whatever it is you are doing this time of year, let us know at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag winter fun. Now, Cash, it's time for your corrections. Well, what do you got?
Okay, I don't have any corrections, but the podcast just went up, so I wasn't able to really listen. Hail fellows, well met. Obviously, we have some vacation that occurred over the while, so some of our podcasts were not as timely as normal, and I wish your indulgence in that. It's, you know, we're into normal season now.
Yep.
As a follow-up, though, for the FDR that we talked about last time, I found out that when they stamped the backs of the envelopes and things, all the departments generally knew that FDR was a stamp collector. And so whenever something came from overseas, they'd throw the envelopes in a box and then ship them off. At the end of his life, Roosevelt was really residing down in Georgia and playing with his stamps because of health reasons. And a lot of the what you commonly see are foreign covers with the H.R. Harmer FDR collection sold by H.R. Harmer backstamp, or cut squares with the little stamp on the back. The envelopes are things that he was working on. The cut squares were things he didn't need. He would cut the stamps off the envelope, meaning he was a bad postal history collector, and he would throw those into a box to give away as donations or freebies and stuff. So when you see the cut squares with the stamp on the back that is from the Roosevelt collection, that was something that he actually worked on, didn't need, cut off the envelope, and then put it to donate to some other cause. And I thought that was kind of interesting because that's a stamp that was actually in his hand.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And so I'm now looking for the cut squares more than just the envelopes. The second thing is, on our last podcast, we were giving away Volume 2, Book of Secrets. And Richard and Y-E-H-L-E, Yeely, from Sacramento, you got here first, so you get one. However, we got a fan mail from John Collins from UK, and I'm sorry, he used a Monty Python stamp on his letter. And so I'm going to give out two of the Book of Secrets because, hey, it's a Monty Python stamp.
One guy came in first, the other guy came in coolest.
He's from London, by the way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's about it.
And he doubled up, too. He sent you two covers.
Oh, yeah.
Just to make sure.
The second cover was the World War I commemoratives, and that's pretty neat. But, you know, when you have World War I versus Monty Python, no competition. So your Book of Secrets are in the mail.
And thank you. That's really cool. Those are our... our first Stamp Show Here Today fan mail letters. Those are going to go into collections. Those are really neat.
Very cool. I want to say thank you to Marcel Sleeker for your generosity to the show also. And we will buy a new microphone or two to help us bring this wonderful... To continue to bring this flawlessly presented podcast to you for the next however many years we can keep this equipment going.
Just in the nick of time, because one of them is dying just a little bit.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Shall we go on to our expert topic?
I think it's time.
Okay. And our expert topic today is first day and event covers.
Well, obviously, we can't cover that entire subject.
Well, we can try.
But let's get started.
Yes. In the realm of stamps, there is an unending sea of things for us to collect. Some people collect certain countries, some certain topics on stamps, and others for the postal history. Into this last category falls the first day cover, some of which can be incredibly expensive. So what is a first day cover, commonly referred to as an FDC?
And go.
Well, obviously, it's a cover with a stamp that has been canceled on the first day of issue of the stamp.
It's typically an earliest known usage.
Not necessarily.
I know, and that's what we're good. That's why this.
There's a difference.
That's why we're not going to be able to. This is going to go first, all over the place.
Well, yeah. First day cover is the first day that the stamp is available for use.
Like
now, sometimes they get out early.
Yep. Exactly.
And those are different.
The first day cover of all first day covers is May 6th, 1840, the penny black. That's the first day that the first stamp could be used. May 6th, 19 or 1840. I keep saying 19. 1840. From there up until, I'm going to say, the 1920s, maybe the 1915 era, a stamp was canceled on the first day, and it was just postally done.
It wasn't something that collectors did on purpose.
Right.
Well, up until the early 20th century, there was no big production. People didn't produce them as a commercial item to sell.
It wasn't philatelic.
Right. They were just happy accidents that people collected, and there weren't a whole lot of collectors. But I don't know when it started for other countries, but it was the Black Harding Memorial issue where it started really for us in the United States, where people realized, hey, this, you know, let's get this canceled on the first day of availability. And collect it that way.
And I believe that was George Lind's who made most of those.
George Lind was the one that made those covers.
And he made it as a morning cover, first day commemorating the stamp. And he was a major, for those who don't know, he was a major.
He was a publisher and a publisher,
writer, stamp collector, trailblazer in the early part of the century.
Lind's as in Lind's Magazine, Lind's?
Lind's as in Lind's Magazine.
Oh, okay. So then, since FDCs weren't always around, how do you collect them prior to that?
You look for them.
Yeah, you're looking for earliest known uses. You have to know when the first day was.
And in a lot of cases, they don't actually know when the first day is. So in that case, you're just really looking for an earliest known usage.
I've seen that in the catalog before. There's like a little bit of controversy around it too. I have the oldest. No, I do.
Well, there's two different abbreviations. There's EKU for earliest known use, and then there's EDU for earliest documented use.
Okay. What's the difference?
Well, obviously, a documented use is something that we now have proof of, photocopies, images, written documentation of something
also,
to prove that you have it.
From the printer or from the government or something
it's
like
not
that.
It's not an anecdotal type of relation. Hey, I remember seeing this. Well, that's not documentation. That's
the Bureau of Engraving and Printing says that they shipped out this first stamp to New York on January 27th. Boom. That's the earliest documented use. You may be able to find them with that also, but you're not going to find them earlier.
So when did they start getting really cool cachets on these things?
That was the late 20s, early 30s when they started doing those. And that was just a way to denote that they actually were. And most of them were rubber stamps. They weren't printed on the envelopes. They were just rubber stamps. So they would make a rubber stamp for my favorite. Well, not my favorite, but the one that I have the most of is the Ohio Canal issue, because they have quite a few different little rubber stamps that people have made. And then, of course, later on, they started actually printing them on the envelopes. Well, and then they started getting really decorative printed on the envelopes. And then you have these really gorgeous first day covers coming out.
Yeah, but and now, if you want a first day cancellation, I think they're available from the Postal Service for a period of 60 days.
Yeah.
So they're not actually necessarily canceled on the first day of issue, as they would have been in the early days.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the demand for them has dropped so much, is because these aren't really first day covers anymore. They are first 60 day covers.
Right.
What do you call that? Backdating?
Yeah, they backdate.
Well,
and worse than that, if you get one and it's damaged in the mail, you can mail it back for like 2 or 3 months and they'll replace it.
Yeah,
so you could have a 90-day stamp.
Well, what they do is they make extras and they replace it with a generic one if you have a damaged one. But you know, the cool thing is, if you go to a stamp ceremony where they issue the stamp, like I think they're going to do this month,
they're going to do it at Arco Expo for UN.
This weekend.
Mm-hmm.
One neat thing to do would be to get the stamp and then go to a number of post offices locally and mail yourself a letter. Now, they would have the official first day date, but it wouldn't be the location of the first day. So the official issuing place would be, Fullerton?
Right.
California? But if you took it to, say, Los Angeles, you could have an unofficial first day cover.
And they had that in the olden days. You'd have 5 or 6 cities with recognized first day cancels.
Sometimes. And a lot of times it was a city where the stamp was issued, but then Washington, D.C. also as a parallel, and either the same day or one day later.
Well,
were considered first day of issue.
Well, sometimes.
Because transportation in those days was not necessarily as quick as it is today either.
Yeah, yeah. But you'd have like the Webster one. You'd have where the city that Webster died had a first day cover, and the city that he was born in, and then the city that he published his dictionary,
and then
Washington, D.C., and then Webster, New York. Yeah. So you'd have like 5 or 6 guys who would have first day ceremonies. That doesn't happen anymore, but it did happen back then. And some cities are more valuable than others, with Washington, D.C. always being the least expensive. And like Scott said, sometimes Washington, D.C. was a day later.
And those are collected as well, because, 80, 90 years ago, it wasn't real easy to travel large distances.
Yeah. No.
So maybe if a first day ceremony occurred in, we'll say, Nebraska, you weren't necessarily going to be able to get there from Georgia.
Yeah, there's no way.
So Washington, D.C. would have been the next best option.
So, yeah, there's a couple of different ways people collect first day covers. On the really old ones, you want the earliest known use. You want the first day the stamp was issued. And these are going to be non-philatelic covers. These are going to be covers that just went through the mail on the first day the stamp was issued. Then you get, starting with the Harding and going later, you have the philatelic realm, let's say. And you are looking now for stamps with the first day canceled. But these are philatelic. Then you get to the late 1920s, and you want them cached. And then you get to the 1930s, and you want them not cached. And then you get to the 1960s, and you want them full covered color, because even if they're cached, if they're just a black and white cached, you don't want them. And if they're addressed, you don't want them anymore. And if they have no cached, then they're just junk. So there's a definite dropping in value based on whether or not it's addressed, whether or not it's cached, and whether or not it's actually got a first day cancel
but
or
I,
a cancel.
I think of a lot of that is just people's preference, and they're kind of getting, well, you need to get it this way or it's not going to be worth any money. But that's not true. If you enjoy the black and white cachets and you don't care whether it's addressed to somebody else, then that's great. But there isn't a lot of demand for that at this time. I mean, there used to not be a whole lot of demand for postal history.
Well, yeah.
And people just cut the stamps off their envelopes.
Mr. Roosevelt.
Now, there is plenty of demand for postal history. So things might come around.
Yeah.
You know, you can never predict that. That's just the state of where we're at
right
now.
If you want to collect a cheap collecting interest, you can collect not in demand first day covers, because you can find first day covers from the 1940s with a full colored flugel cachet that may be $20-$30.
I would
whereas
suggest
a stamp with an art craft is going to be a buck.
I would suggest if you're a topical collector, first day covers is a really great area because there's so much more artwork that you can put into a cachet. And there are generally multiple cachet makers. Now, in the United States, the government does not produce cached covers. All of our cachets are privately produced.
No, well, unless you've been to the post office recently.
Well, yeah, they've started to do a couple here and there, but
For the last, 4 years, you have had post office first day covers. And they are gorgeous. Man, do they do a great job. But they are totally philatelic.
Yeah, but a lot of governments, like Canada, is almost exclusively government-produced first-day covers.
Yep.
Because they can do it, they do a lot better job, a lot less expensively than a private firm can do or an individual can do. And so they're predominantly government-produced. So one of the great things we have in the United States is the variety of cachet makers that we have.
And
varying levels of artwork that you can find.
And let's not ignore gold stamps.
That was another marketing tool, ripoff.
Oh.
No.
I hate those things. When I first started collecting, oh, those are so cool and crap. Now what do I do with them all?
Well, you know, the Marilyn Monroe, the James Dean, and the Elvis, I believe they're between $25 and $50 each. All the other ones, with a couple exceptions, are between $0.25 and $0.50 each.
You want a set of Zeps?
Yeah.
You want a Pan Am set?
Yeah, they have Pan Am sets in gold.
Inverted Pan Ams?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, those people collect.
I think I have a C3A at my house that's like that, that's gold.
But anyway,
I just sold a C3A.
Back to first day covers.
It was a UNC3A, so it didn't count. Anyway, okay.
So what makes some of them really valuable? Because I know, for instance, I got a 2 foot long dealer box of Transportation Series first day covers from the 1980s. for like $20.
Yep.
Well, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And I know I was looking for any that had the plate number on the stamp. I knew that was going to be a little more valuable.
Exactly.
So how
stamp
does that all
varieties.
Work?
Did you find any?
I found one.
Stamp varieties will make a first day cover valuable. As you said, you were looking for plate numbers on the transportation series coils. That's definitely one thing. If you're looking at praxis, you're looking at maybe line pairs in the coils, things like that.
Anything before 1900, and really later than that, but anything before 1900, if you have a first day cover, you've got a major, major, major item.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some of those get really expensive, really fast.
Very, very expensive.
Yeah. They just sold a little while ago a Cattle in the Storm and a 50 center, and I believe the Cattle in the Storm went for $22,000. I don't know if that was including the tip or not including the tip, so it could be 15% more than that.
And that's why you do like a $2,000 stamp?
Not even.
Oh, especially used?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big premium.
Yeah, and then the 50 center went for way up there, too. I forget what it was, but they were both on registered covers to Brazil, I believe it was, or something like that. So they were really cool, too.
Yeah, at least in that era from here, a lot of those went to Germany.
Huh.
But to find one to Brazil would be very unusual. But back to what you're asking about, the more modern first day covers and the cachets is a lot of times what people will collect.
I was just going to ask about that.
And some of the different cachet makers, you know, obviously some artists are better than others. And so it's the way that the topic is treated and the artwork a lot of times that will pull the value up, and in some cases way up. I mean, it's just like collecting regular artwork. You know, some artists are more collectible than others. Well, some cachet makers are more collectible than others.
Well, I saw, and actually in the Harmer Schau sale that's coming up, there is a baseball first day cover coming up, and it has a hand-painted cachet. And I believe its estimate is $450. Wow. Whereas a normal one with a nice cachet might still be $50 to $100, but the stamp before it and the stamp after it, the, you know, catalog value of first day cover may be $2.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's topical as well.
It's topical and beautiful related, or driven. Let's say the demand is driven by the beauty and the topic.
Absolutely. Both of those can drive.
Oh, I've dug through many a stamp dealer's first day cover box looking for stuff, and you find one that's just like a plain, either black or maybe two-tone, and it's a couple of bucks, like World War II commemorative era. But Scott's shown up with some really beautiful, multicolor, hand-drawn, one-of-a-kind pieces that are more like in the $40 to $50 range for the art.
Yep, yep.
I mean, there are definitely some nice cover or cachet makers out there, even today. And one in particular that I like is Kendall Beevil. He airbrushes. He does airbrushed limited editions of generally around 200 for each of the cachets that he does. And they're all hand painted by him. And they're just absolutely gorgeous. He probably does, I don't know, maybe 20 issues a year. He's one of my current favorites. But I never really got into first day cover collecting until
It's bulky, for one thing.
Well, but I sat down and talked to him at length. And I just kind of fell in love with his style of art. And so I probably collect half a dozen or a dozen of those a year from him.
Okay, so we know what FDCs are. Now, what are event covers? What's the difference?
Well, event covers, obviously, are less related to the stamp, and they commemorate an event. It might be a city,
a founding of a
city. Might be the commissioning of a ship. It might be
landing on the moon.
Yeah. Okay.
It could be
space shuttle being launched. Space
shuttle team winning the World Series. You know, it could be pretty much anything that you want to commemorate. I mean, if you created a cachet
which
for
we
your
did.
Birthday and had it canceled on your birthday, that would be commemorating an event.
So I know that means we've made some here.
Yeah,
when Leonard Nimoy died.
Absolutely.
We made the Leonard Nimoy parting cover. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like some of the early Navy covers that were, you know, you can find things that were canceled on Easter and New Year's Day and Christmas Day and Veterans Day and 4th of July and all sorts of stuff like that.
So are there any of those that are valuable or important?
Well, absolutely.
Lots.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, some, as far as naval covers goes, there are some ships that either didn't survive long or just weren't very prolific. They had very small crews and were not big, popular. I mean, you have a ship like an aircraft carrier is generally much more popular and creates more items than would, say, a submarine or something like that.
Well, at the auction coming up, there's two Amelia Earhart covers autographed by her.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. They're,
yes, please.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I have quite a few of the Lindbergh. When he finished up, he flew his Spirit of St. Louis the last time. He flew from Puerto Rico to Cuba to Florida. And so I have covers from that flight. Other events or
I have one that was signed by Orville Wright on the 25th anniversary of his Kitty Hawk flight.
I have a USS Ooh. Texas.
His granddaughter actually made those and had him sign them before his death.
Oh, that's really cool.
So I was able to get my my hands on one of those.
Actually, kind of, you know, the FDR covers with the stamp on the back saying that it's from his collection. Those are kind of indirectly event covers.
Yeah, they commemorate.
Yeah, they commemorated the sale of his collection and that this was part of it.
Well, one event I like is was National Airmail Week in 1938. I really kind of like that because there's so many different covers available for that. The for people who don't know what National Airmail Week was, in 1938... for the 20th anniversary of the first regular airmail service in the United States, the postmaster and the president, who was FDR, came up with this idea to have – they wanted to stimulate people using airmail and educate them as to, you know, why would you pay extra to mail a letter and use the airmail service. And it was also a scheme to help out the struggling aviation companies that were providing the airmail service. So,
well, you also have to realize that back then, flying was...
Well, it was a novelty.
Wow.
It was a novelty.
Yeah. I mean, today we take it for granted, and, you know, most of us have been on an airplane. It's like, oh, no big deal, except that, you know, they lose your luggage. back then, flight was... Wow. And, you know, we went through the same thing with the space shuttle and the moon landing and all that stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, nothing, you know, that was really great, but now that doesn't excite people. You know, the next thing that excites people, we'll see what it is.
First guy on Mars.
Mm. It could be, you know, a Mars thing or something, you know, priority mail service to Mars.
There you go.
I saw a documentary called The Martian where I guess there's big potato farming going on up there.
Really super efficient.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Potato farmers are all moving to Mars now. And before that, you know, you had railroads. You know, everybody was going, wow, railroads, this is neat. You know, we have these technological bumps, and we're lucky that stamp collecting gets to celebrate them and document them.
Yeah.
So I have to ask... It doesn't sound like there could be too many problems, but with FDCs and event covers, are there any problems to look out for? Any sort of counterfeiting or people trying to change things? Or?
There's only one that I can think of. Well, actually, there's two, but there's only one. You have to, if you're going to be paying significant money for the early mm-hmm. hand-stamped cachets, make sure that they're in the book. Because I could go out there today And, you know, if I got a whole bunch of Harding covers, you know, I buy a bundle of them and I got 50 of them, I'll go out and I'll make a cachet stamp and then I'll go in and stamp them all. Well, all of a sudden, you know, these $5 ones all of a sudden go up to $20 because they're cacheted. But they're not really cacheted in the correct time period. They're cacheted, you know, today.
Well, that's something that it's a concern to first day cover collectors. They're not true cachets because a cachet is technically on the envelope when it gets canceled.
Or shortly thereafter.
Shortly thereafter. But what you're talking about is what is called in the hobby an add-on.
Right.
And those are looked down upon, kind of.
Except for people who look up upon them because they don't know any better.
Right, right. So add-ons are a problem as far as that goes. So, yeah, you want to make sure that there's documentation for the older things that you purchase and pay a decent amount of money for.
And actually, like I said, it's pretty easy. Just if you see a cachet that isn't in the book, then it's an add-on. It's not a real cachet because nobody's going to discover some weird cachet maker from the 1920s. These guys were all in business. They advertised everywhere. They're not going to have their little secret stash and then all of a sudden somebody's going to find. The second one is when you're finding first day covers, a lot of times people misread the dates. You'll look at a 7 and it'll look like a 1. You'll look at a 6 and it'll look like an 8. And you just flat out get the date wrong. November 23rd first day cover turns out to be a November 28th not first day cover. And I see that a lot, especially, you know, I collect the 1850s, 1850 to 1860. And you see a lot of July 1st, 1857 covers marked as 1851 covers, ignoring the fact that it's actually a different stamp. It's a U.S. number 11 versus a U.S. number 10. Some people will think, you know, they have a $10,000 cover when in fact they have a 6 year too late cover. And I've seen that more than a handful of times.
So that too brings to mind then that probably first documented isn't going to be that terribly messy, but I could see earliest known use.
Oh, that I have
fake cancels.
I got a certificate for an earliest known use number 85C, which is a grilled issue. And it was from Philadelphia. And there's a person named Kayford or Clark, I forget which his name is, but he documented these cancels all over the place. So we were able to prove, because it didn't have the year in the date. It had the month and the day, but not the year.
I've seen that.
So we were able to prove that this was the earliest known use by 3 days. It was 3 days earlier than anybody else. I have a New York one from the same correspondence that's a day earlier from New York, same stamp, but nobody has done the research. So we can't confirm what year the New York cancel is, but we could from the Philadelphia. So from this one correspondence, I could conceivably have the oldest known use, and then the next oldest known use will kill that one, but we have no way of confirming it. So earliest known uses, you could always find them. Now, one warning, you are never going to find my earliest known use is 3 days before the other documented one. You're never going to find one that's a month or two. And, you know, sometimes you see them, it's a year earlier. And there's no way it's going to be a year earlier. You know, it's just not possible. You're misreading the date.
Yeah, because the earliest known use, that's after people have sifted through hundreds of thousands of them, finding them. That's a distillation down.
For 150 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this one correspondence, nobody had really checked it. So it was fair game. And, yes, there was this one stamp, which was a valuable stamp on its own. I said 85C. It was just an 85, not an 85. Which one? The C grill is an 85, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that way I get to avoid a Kaj's correction.
It's just an 85, not an 85C.
It was an 85. And like I said, you know, it was just, if somebody had cut the envelopes, you know, made cut squares, big, huge, giant cut squares.
Was it Roosevelt?
Ooh. Oh. But, you know, somebody out there goes, damn, I don't have the earliest known use anymore. And and if I sold mine from Philadelphia and then somebody came up and said, hey, here's a correspondence. Now we can figure out what year this is from. The one that he purchased isn't going to be the earliest known use anymore because I'm holding one in my hand that could.
You just took a zero off of that guy's price.
Exactly.
85 is a D grill.
D grill. What's the C grill? 83 then. It was the C grill. It was the grill points pointing up. Okay. 83. Why did I get 85C on my mind for some reason? Because it's the expensive one. Anyway, yeah, so earliest known uses are tough.
Sorry, didn't mean to help you out with those corrections.
No.
Well, hey, you know, if I didn't make mistakes, I wouldn't have Kaj's corrections.
That's true. Does anyone have any favorites?
Yeah, oh, I have a favorite. I have my, I want to, you know, I collect 1850 ones and I really want a first day cover for the 3 cent 1851 stamp, but I have a first day of the rate without a stamp on it. So I have a first day of the 3 cent rate. I have a first day of the unpaid 5 cent rate. I have a second day pair to New Orleans. So I like that period and I like those. Those are almost first day covers.
Scott, you got anything?
I think I already covered mine, but between National Airmail Week and Navy covers from the 30s and 40s, and then the new Beaville caches, I think that pretty much covers it.
What about you, Jeff? What do you got?
Some pretty cool first day covers from Disneyland, Disney stamps.
Some of those Disney covers that come out of the post office.
Yeah.
They're gorgeous.
Yes, they are. Those are the ones that Kaj is talking about, like pro-level art.
Yeah.
It's not just some little rubber stamp. It's like a full-out.
Well, not only really that, nice another thing is if you're going to make your own caches, you got to watch out for copyright laws.
Yeah.
That's true.
So yeah, that's true.
Usually, but, you know, the post office kind of has the inside track on that. Because if they've already got permission and copyrights for the stamp, a lot of times they can use the same art or very similar art.
And just
for the cachet.
FYI for people out there, if you make, and this is actually the law of the land, if you make 25 or less, then it's personal use. So you will notice a lot of handmade cachets or something like that. They'll have, you know, Marilyn Monroe or something in a famous pose, and it'll be number 1 of 25 or number 2 of 25. Because if you do 26, then they go, oh, you're doing this for profit. So I have no clue how they came up with the number 25, but if you do 25 of something, you're pretty safe.
So that means that there's
because
like,
they'd be going after a whole lot of people if they did less than
25.
Yeah, that's true.
That I mean, it just kind of cut down the number of people they're going to go after.
Does it mean that there's like 32 1 of 25s?
Yeah. Oh.
What about you, Don?
Oh, I don't have any covers yet.
None?
Not yet.
How harsh.
Shame, Kaj.
I know. Lots of stamps, but no covers, huh?
I mean, we just had Christmas and you didn't give her anything?
I gave her a sheet of Hong Kong dragon stamps.
That's true, yes. Yes, he did. And Steve gave me dragon postcard.
Yep.
That is so cool.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a theme, right? It's dragons. So I guess I'm looking for maybe a cover with a dragon.
With a Chinese dragon on it?
That would
hint,
be cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's not collecting if people give it to you. You have to seek it yourself.
Ah.
It's the exploration and discovery.
Kaj's new rules.
Remember that the next time a dealer friend of yours comes up, you can go, Kaj, I got this really cool 11 that you have to have.
Well, I guess I'm going to be expanding at the show this weekend.
Yeah, the show, we're recording this on the Monday before Orco Expo. I forget what day it is. The Tuesday before Orco Expo. I lost a day somewhere. All this vacation stuff. And so we're going to be at Orco Expo. However, nobody is going to be able to know that by listening to this podcast, because is it going to get up before Orco?
No, it'll be the Wednesday after.
Yeah, so, and then at Orco Expo, people who are listening to this will be able to look ahead to the next one before it's announced, and Jessica is going to be doing her interviews throughout the Stamp Show.
Yep.
Yes. You can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com. Twitter Stamp Show HT, Facebook Stamp Show Here Today, and our website www.stampshowheretoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Tom Mills, H.R. Harmer Stamp Auctions. You're listening to the podcast for Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Share Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today! To send up, address unknown, no such number.